Today's Teisho will be on case 2 in the Mumon Kan, the U Men Kwan, the Gate of No Barrier. Hyakujo's Fox. When Hyakujo Osho delivered a certain series of sermons, Teishos, an old man always followed the monks to the main hall and listened to him. When the monks left the hall, the old man would also leave. One day, however, he remained behind, and Hyakujo asked him, "Who are you standing here before me?" The old man replied, "I am not a human being. In the days of Kashyapa Buddha, I was a head monk living here on this mountain. One day a student asked me, 'Does a person of enlightenment fall under the yoke of causation or not?' I answered, 'No, he does not.' Since then, I have been doomed to forego 500 rebirths as a fox. I beg you now to give the turning word to release my life as a fox. Tell me, does a man of enlightenment fall under the yoke of causation or not?" Hyakujo answered, "He does not ignore causation." No sooner had the old man heard these words than he was enlightened. Making vows, he said, "I am emancipated from my life as a fox. I shall remain on this mountain. I have a favor to ask of you. Would you please bury my body as that of a dead monk?" Hyakujo had the director of the monks strike with the gavel and inform everyone that after the midday meal there would be a funeral service for a dead monk. The monks wondered at this, saying, "Everyone is in good health. Nobody is in the sick ward. What does this mean?" After the meal, Hyakujo led the monks to the foot of a rock on the far side of the mountain, and with his staff poked out the dead body of a fox and performed the ceremony of cremation. That evening he ascended the rostrum and told the monks the whole story. Obaku thereupon asked him, "The old man gave the wrong answer and was doomed to be a fox for 500 rebirths. Now suppose he had given the right answer, what would have happened to him then?" Hyakujo said, "You come here to me and I will tell you." Obaku went up to Hyakujo and boxed his ears. Hyakujo clapped his hands with a laugh and said, "I was thinking that the barbarian had a red beard, but now I see before me the red-bearded barbarian himself." Mumon's comment, not falling under causation, how could this make the monk into a fox? Not ignoring causation, how could this make the old man emancipate? If you come to understand this, you will realize how old Hyakujo would have enjoyed 500 rebirths as a fox. Mumon's verse, not falling, not ignoring, two faces of one die, not ignoring, not falling, 1,000 errors, 1,000,000 mistakes. So this is day 2 of our August Sesshin, and I want to thank everybody for doing an excellent job. This morning there was a really deep sitting in this room. It was really quite exciting, quite wonderful to see. I love this Zen practice, and so it was very exciting to see everybody sitting so deeply this morning. It's really rare to see this kind of practice, and it's wonderful. And I'm just very happy to be doing sesshin with all of you. So this is day two, and this is usually the day when people begin to get a little tired. So don't be surprised if you find your energy disappearing as the day goes on. If it doesn't happen, wonderful. But it may already have happened, yeah? Around, let's see, 11:45 last night, yeah? 10:45 last night. So it might be that you're as we say in English, we have some things in English are ridiculous, but sometimes we have some really good sayings, you know? He says, my ass is dragging, you know? My ass is really dragging, you know? That's a great saying. You couldn't beat that in any language, right? You know, my ass is dragging. So maybe your ass is dragging, you know? And if that happens, that's a part of the process. So, you know, don't worry. Something is going to happen to you if you keep going. Don't be deterred by this stage in the process of sesshin. Usually people come to sesshin with either fear or high hopes or some mixture of the two. And on day one, if this is your first sesshin, you don't know what to expect. So at the end of day one, if you're still alive, then congratulations, you know, made it. If you're more experienced, you know, everybody knows the drill on day one. You know, you might have been practicing for 10 years, but when you come here to sit on day one, your mind is abuzz with all kinds of junk, right? Just all that mental stuff. And you sit there and all this stuff just comes up and comes up and comes up, and you think, my God, I've been doing this for 10 years, let's say. And I still, my day one of sesshin, my mind is still full of all this stuff. So that's how it is, you know? Everybody's pretty much instructed the same way. And on day one, you know, you're sitting there on the cushion thinking, you know, why didn't I pay those bills? Or how am I ever going to get my teeth fixed? Or whatever. You know. But you can't get your teeth fixed now, right? So you might as well just let it go. You can't solve any of those problems right now. At least not directly. Yeah? So why not let them go and just be in the moment? Maybe the solution will present itself if you can just be in the moment. So what happens is day one, people are working through their inner obstacles. And maybe day two also. But as day two goes on, you're going to get too tired to care about your obstacles. You know, your junk. And at some point, you're going to begin to have a simpler mind. And you're going to notice that just getting through the next sit is all you expect to accomplish in life. See, that's a wonderful mindset. You know, we have such high goals ordinarily. Even if we don't have a lot of confidence in ourselves, we have enormous expectations. And we go through life being either elated or disappointed, or elated and disappointed. And at some point you come to sesshin, though, and by day two you start to get so tired. And the sitting is difficult. It's a physical challenge, right? And so if you can just get through 25 minutes, it's like winning the, you know, lotto jackpot, right? It's like, I did it, you know? It's so beautiful to live that way. So simple, right? Beautiful and simple. Just get through. Normally, you know, people go through 25 minutes all the time. It's no big deal, right? They don't think anything of it, you know? But here in the sesshin, being able to get through 25 minutes is a great accomplishment. I think that's wonderful. That's really a wonderful experience, you know? Really, you know, at the end of our lives, I don't really know, I haven't reached the end of my life yet, but I've known people who are at the end of their lives. And at the end of your life, I think so many things you worried about just stand revealed as baloney. You know? So many things. It's very interesting, for example, to meet people who are who have all their lives they've acquired beautiful things, you know. I remember there was my wife's mother had a good friend, his name was Bill Crant, and he was in the Foreign Service. Actually, he was in the Foreign Service in World War II, during the World War II period, in Europe. And he was a diplomat, in other words, and had many interesting adventures. He was in Europe at the time of Hitler, and he was involved in all of those terrible events. And then he was stationed in Southeast Asia, and India and other places. And he had collected this house of antiques, you know. And he got up every day and ate two eggs and smoked cigarettes all day long. And he lived to be like 85 years old, you know, go figure. And he drank like a fish, too. You know? And he looked, he had a beard and mustache. He had white, he looked like a thin version of Colonel Sanders, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And he was a very funny man. But at the end of his life, he was quite sick. And all of these precious objects that he had spent a lifetime collecting were absolutely meaningless to him. It was just like junk. So he had you know, worked so hard to acquire all this stuff, and at the end he just didn't matter to him. And I think that kind of simplicity, it's a shame to wait a lifetime to achieve that kind of simplicity. You know, we Zen people don't wait for the end of our lives. We can achieve that right now. So all you have to do is watch your breath. All you have to do is watch your breath. And just follow each breath out. Each breath out, contract your hara, and be with your breath. And at the end of your breath, you might notice that there's a little bit of stillness and that your mind is a little bit empty. So you go, whoa. And at the end of your breath, your mind is a little bit empty. Yeah? And that emptiness is quite wonderful. Please keep going back to that. It won't let you down. So if this is your first sesshin and you're working with the breath perception, you're going to have the chance to be a really simple person, which is tremendously, in my opinion, liberating. And some of you are working on the mu koan. So you're spending more time in that little empty space at the end of your breath. So you're saying, whoa. And you're spending more time in that little space at the end of your breath. And if you stay there long enough, it's going to be very, very liberating. You know, really liberating. There's something about that empty space, which is just heaven itself, you know. It's like a little bit like dying, you know. When my father was dying, my father was a smoker, and he smoked all his life, and when he was about 45 years old, his doctor said, if you don't give up cigarettes, you're going to die. So my father changed, he heard it, and he changed to cigars, right? Perfect, perfect. Right? And he'd start smoking cigars, and everybody would say, what's up with the cigar? And he said, well, I don't inhale. Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, he died of lung cancer many years later. And I loved my father very much. And the last thing he said was, God, I wish I hadn't smoked. It's like, oh, it's too late now, man, you know? It's like, God, I wish I hadn't smoked, you know? Oh. So anyway, at the end of his life, he wished he hadn't smoked, right? And he realized maybe I didn't need those cigarettes so much. But he became very simple, right, you know? We put his bed in the dining room of the house where he lived so he could see out. And he was very lucky. He lived in a beautiful place out in the country in Virginia, near a town called Warrenton, Virginia. And you could see out the dining room window, big dining room window, you could see like a field and trees. You know, a very nice way to go is to be able to look at something like that. So he would just sit there all day and look out at this beautiful view. And I was with him the last couple of days until he died. And last day he died, he got up, you know, he woke up. And he had cancer, so he couldn't breathe. You know, his lungs were filling up with fluid. And he had a morphine drip. And but he really loved the view out the window. And he just looked out at the trees and the fields, which for most of his life would have been unbearably simple, right? He couldn't have sat there for 5 minutes. But now it was just absorbing to him. And a couple hours before he died, he wanted something to eat. And I said, what do you want? He said, I want soup. So I went to the kitchen, and in the cabinet there's a can of chicken, Campbell's chicken noodle soup. I don't know about you, but when I was a little boy, my mother always used to make chicken noodle soup, Campbell's chicken noodle soup. If you open up the can and you pour it into a pot, you'll see that there might be 5 noodles, yeah? And there might be 3 little tiny pieces of chicken, right? Yeah? Maybe it's changed now. But when I was growing up, there would be like a few noodles and a few tiny little pieces. If you had like a magnifying glass, you could see it, you know, piece of chicken. Anyway, I took that into my dad, and he smelled it, and then he had like 2 teaspoons full. And that was enough, but he said, oh, so good, so good. And it was good, you know. That kind of simplicity is so precious. You know, we have that kind of simplicity when we're young, right? When we're, you know, when we're young, the simple things are really exciting, you know, like rainstorm. It's so exciting, you know. I've told this story before, you know, when my sister was a little girl, she used to like to, when she was like little, like I think 4, she used to like, after rainstorm, she used to like to go out and sit in puddles and take a pee-pee, you know. So, you know, that's delightful. Simple, right? You know? Delightful. So anyway, we lose contact with that beautiful simplicity. And Zen is all about getting back to that. You know, just so you know, we get a little spoiled as we grow older, you know. We begin to have expectations about the moment, you know, it should be like this and not like this moment isn't good enough. You know, so if you go on a trip, maybe on a vacation, you might go somewhere and you might have expectations about what's going to happen, and then doesn't pan out. It could be like a trip to France or Hawaii or any other place, and you might go there and it's just not up to snuff. My mother-in-law was a very, I would say, unhappy person. And not a happy person. And she was kind of like an alcoholic. She was had a drinking problem. And that was how she dealt with her unhappiness. She had been the only child of a couple who really had high expectations for her. Her father and her mother sent her to really good college, really good schools, and then to college. And they really wanted her to be something special. And during World War II, when all the men were in war, busily fighting World War II, a lot of jobs opened up that were not traditionally for women. This is before women had more equal access to opportunity. And indeed, my mother-in-law had a very good mind. I mean, she was extremely, she was like a straight-A student, very literate person. And they hired her to be a news presenter and a news writer at a local, a big radio station. I guess it must have been in Dallas, Texas. And she, would write the news, present the news on the radio, and she has had a beautiful speaking voice. And after the war was over, the society was very unfair and said, well, you have to give up your job now, even though you're excellent, because some guys come back from the war and you have to give them your job. So that really ate her up, you know, and it was quite unfair. And then basically she married a person who was like her total opposite, as is so often the case. My father-in-law is like a hippie. He was a hippie before hippies, you know? You know what I mean? He was like the Jack is his name, Jack Sutman. And I actually love Jack Sutman. I love my father-in-law. Because he's a hippie, you know? Just basically, he didn't have long hair, but he probably has never worn a tie in his life, you know, maybe once, you know, to get his job. He's a design engineer, basically. And after World War II, he got a job at Los Alamos Labs in New Mexico. And, you know, you have all these guys who come up with, ideas, physicists and all this stuff. And my father-in-law was the kind of guy who would sit down and actually draw what it's going to look like. So they'd say, we want a device that does this, and they had no idea how to engineer it. And he'd come in and say, well, it's going to be this big, and it's going to be round, and it's going to look like this. And he had, you know, all these other people he worked with. But he never wore a tie or a suit. He used to wear a blue jeans to work, and, informal, like canvas shirt or something, all his life, you know. And his idea of a good time was to go fishing. He loved to fish. And he had been religious in his early life, but he had asked his minister, after his dog died, he said, well, will I find my dog in heaven? And the minister said, there are no dogs in heaven. And my father-in-law sort of said, well, man, screw this. And that was the end for him, you know? That was the end of religion for him. So, these two people are both interesting people, right? And they got together and had like very unhappy marriage that lasted forever. You know. Anyway, my mother-in-law was not really able to adapt very well to her situation. She married this guy who wasn't upwardly mobile, you know, and he wasn't what she wanted. Somebody who she should have married, somebody who would have been the president of the Chamber of Commerce, you know, and a mover and shaker. And she married this guy whose idea of a good time was to go fishing and maybe even smoke a joint, you know. And he was like a total hippie, you know. And so, you know, she was always unhappy and never in the moment, or very rarely. And I remember I just recently went to Hawaii, and that was my biggest trip that was the biggest trip. And the previous time was almost 20 years ago when I made the terrible mistake of going with my in-laws to the British Virgin Islands and spending a week on a boat with my mother-in-law, you know? And she, you know, at one point, it's not her, you know, I mean, please understand that we all get caught in traps and we can't figure out how to get out of them. You know, so I'm not holding her up as the bad guy in this story. You know, we all get caught. You know, we get caught. We don't know how to get out of our traps, you know. And my father also was an alcoholic. And he too was very trapped and couldn't figure how to get out. And I so sympathize. Probably if I hadn't found Zen, I would probably have had a drinking problem too, you know. And so, you know, my mother-in-law just couldn't get out of her trap. She didn't know what to do, and she couldn't be happy almost in any particular moment. And, you know, we went on this disastrous trip. And, my in-laws often don't get along. My mother, even though my mother-in-law and father-in-law were married forever, they would often bicker, you know. So you're on this boat with these people who are arguing, and you just look around and think, well, you know, America might be over there. I think I'll jump in and try to swim for it, you know. But we came to this one island. You know, one day we came to this island, and believe it or not, there was a restaurant on the island, you know, amazing. So, you know, there's a little, you know, like, what do you call it, place to dock your boat. We tied up the sailboat. It was a sailboat with an engine in it. And we said, let's go to the restaurant. So here we are in the middle of the high seas. There's this island in the middle of nowhere. And on the island, there's a restaurant, right? And so, you know, we've been eating like out of cans and things like that. So we go to this restaurant, and my mother-in-law ordered shrimp. And she got the shrimp, you know, blue sky. You can hear the waves lapping on the beach, you know. She's drinking maybe pina colada, something like that. And she got furious. She said, these shrimp aren't fresh, you know. These are not shrimp. You know. And I just thought to myself, I just thought to myself, my God, you know, there are, you know, this is a restaurant in the middle of the, you know, so what if they're not fresh? It's okay, you know. I have to tell you that I'm not, as I say, I'm not trying to set my mother-in-law up as the bad guy here, because, you know, she was so unhappy and in such pain, and she tried again and again to get out of her unhappiness. And it's like playing chess, you know, with life. Sometimes no matter what move you make, you wind up back where you start, you know, back in the unhappiness again. And she couldn't, and you can't blame people. I don't think you can blame people for failing to escape from their illusions. You know, we all are defeated sometime by life. You know, we all are defeated. There's times when we just can't work it out. We can't get through. We make terrible mistakes. We do bad things. We hurt other people. We exploit other people. Whatever. And we didn't really mean to do it. We just couldn't figure out how to make the right move. You know. And so, you know, you can be in paradise with a shrimp cocktail in one hand and a piña colada in the other hand and be profoundly unhappy. And my feeling is that Zen is really quite special, because it's really like taking a life back to the most basic element, you know, the most basic element, and really back to the basic element, ultimately. And it's saying, look, you know, there's a way of experiencing life which is deeper than your dreams and hopes. It's deeper than your fears. It's deeper than your happiness and your unhappiness. You know? We all have little dreams in our head about what life is going to deliver for us. And we, in the pursuit of our dreams, we can be quite ruthless, you know. We can be cruel and manipulative to others and hurt them deeply. And we can be ruthless to ourselves, you know, when we don't measure up, we can be really lacerating to ourselves and both of us at the same time. And yet, you know, we don't have to live that way. You know, Zen is about stripping away all of those things, the dreams and the fears, and just being present in the moment. And the moment is our liberation. You know, the ability to just be here now is salvation, you know. And if you don't believe me, just keep living. You know, you can go, life is a little bit like being in a giant maze, you know. And you can go around and around and around trying to get out. And, you know, at some point you can be, you know, very unhappy. There's a way of just refusing to play that game, you know, where you just stop. You stop looking for the prize, or you stop looking for the door, and you just say, oh, you know, I'm never getting out of the maze. I'm just going to sit here for a while and look out the window at the field, just like I'm just about to die. You know, at the end of your life, you don't care anymore, right? You're not going to get any prizes. You can't make any more money. If you had it, you wouldn't live long enough to spend it. And life is so beautiful when it's lived in that spirit, in my opinion. So, you know, simplicity is very hard to achieve. We all have these crazy dreams in our head, right? These crazy dreams. When we get them, strangely, we're often unhappy. And when we don't get them, strangely, we're often unhappy. You know, so maybe it's not about making our dreams come true. That's maybe not the best way to live. You know, my feeling is the best way to live is to be present in the moment without a judgment, without aspiration, and without fear. Yeah? And it's very hard to achieve, you know. We're pushed this way and that by our dreams and fantasies. And all of us are deceived by them at times. And we all make mistakes that hurt others. But you don't have to live this way, see? So this koan is very interesting. You know, this is like the second koan in the Mumonkan. first koan is the mu koan. And a lot of people work on the mu koan for maybe 4 or 5 years, 3 or 4 years, long time. And then when they become one in a deep way with mu, they have this wonderful feeling, you know, that everything is going to open up to them. You know, even though practicing mu means giving up your dreams and aspirations and just being in the moment, after you answer the mu koan, what do you know? You're back to your dreams and aspirations again. So, you know, after you answer the mu koan, you can think, all right, you know, I've answered the mu koan, which everybody says is the biggest, most important koan. And you can feel like, you know, you're going to be the next Dalai Lama, maybe, you know, that kind of feeling, just a little bit. You know? And then, you know, you get koan, sometimes your teacher might give you koan number 2, which is Hyakujo's fox. And it's the second koan, I think Mumon put it in there for a particular reason, you know. Basically, this is about a guy who was living on a mountain long ago in a previous kalpa. A kalpa is an incredibly long stretch of time. It's like a world age. It's a concept from Indian thinking. It's a kalpa is like a huge amount of time. So this is the time of Siddhartha Gautama. But in a previous kalpa, there was a Buddha, another Buddha. His name was Kashyapa. And at the time of Kashyapa Buddha, there was a monk living on this mountain who had experienced mu deeply. And somebody came to visit him and said, "Oh, you're a great wise person. Tell me, you know, once you've experienced mu, are you free from..." You could interpret this a lot of different ways. Are you free from right and wrong? Are you free from, involvement with others? Are you free from making mistakes? You know, once you've encountered mu, are you free from making mistakes? Are you above all those poor saps, see, who are still caught in the maze, in the labyrinth? And he said, "Oh yes, definitely." And so he goes straight to hell, basically. There isn't really a hell in the Buddhist worldview, but he keeps getting reincarnated as an unhappy person, you could say. He finds himself right back in his old unhappiness all over again, see, over and over again. And so he says, he keeps coming back as a fox. And finally, he hears about this many, at the end of the kalpa comes and goes, and then there's a new kalpa, and there's this a priest on the mountain named Hyakujo, who gives a talk, and this mysterious old man comes in and sits in the back of the room, and one day Hyakujo comes up to him and says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I used to be the monk on this mountain, but somehow I thought I had achieved liberation, but now I'm back in my miserable mental habits again. See, I thought I would never have to struggle again with my karma, with my mental habits." And Hyakujo basically, the monk says, "How would you answer the question?" And he basically says, you know, one way to look at it is he basically says, "Look, you know, you're never, it's very unlikely, you know, you're ever going to be free from all your illusions. But you see them, and you want to work to eliminate them, right? You know, I mean, there's a difference between people who are slaves to their illusions and their dreams and their fantasies, and people who understand that they're dreams and fantasies, right? And you can, you know, if you practice a little bit, you start living in the moment, and when you start living in the moment, you realize, oh, that's, I'm just playing a game with myself, right? It's my old familiar mental games. You know, one of the good things about doing a lot of zazen is eventually you see, you know, you see your own bullshit, so to speak. You know, we all have these bullshit stories we tell ourselves, right? You know, so, my wife's younger sister has always been jealous of my wife. And, you know, so often in their relationship, she always relives this feeling that she got the short end of the stick, you know. Apparently, she was the youngest child in the family, and once my mother-in-law gathered up all her kids and got home and then realized she'd left the youngest kid, you know, at the store or something, you know. Chris is her name. And so Chris resents my wife very much, because it's like, you got the best of everything. I always got your hand-me-down clothes, right? And it doesn't take much to send her back into this loop. Oh, I'm the littlest one who was neglected, blah, blah, blah. And she just keeps reliving those indignities over and over and over again. So, you know, she hasn't done zazen, you know, so she doesn't suddenly say, hey, I'm doing it again, right? I'm in those stupid little stories, you know. But I think when you can see your own bullshit like that, it's a tremendous advantage. You know, you come to Sesshin, you sit on the cushion, and you don't enter deep, enlightened mind. There's the stories, there's your bullshit, you know. And you just have to clean it up, clean it up, clean it up. And eventually you just get to this place where it's possible to be simple and be present, see. And you know, learning how to accept the moment means learning how to accept our bullshit too. You know, it doesn't mean we go along with it, but we see it's there and we say, okay, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and sweep this away. You know, when you sit on the cushion and you find yourself reliving the past, it's a big mistake to let it sweep you away, to go with it, you know. So if you've made mistakes in your life and you sit on the cushion and you rehearse them over and over again, you're not going to get better mentally, you're going to get more unhappy. You can't really free yourself that way. But if you sit on the cushion and you see your usual bullshit and you follow the breath, or you call Mu, or whatever, little by little, you know, you just let it go. You let it go. Maybe you were the youngest kid. Maybe, you know, mom did leave you at the store. You know, maybe you did get the hand-me-down clothes. It's important, but it's not that important. It's not as important as this moment, you know. So just letting it go, let it go, you know. And just be present in the moment. It's so wonderful. And I think if we live that way, we can be so much more helpful to others and also to ourselves. You know, we can take better care of ourselves, because we're not haunted by ghosts. And we're not desperately trying to fulfill our dreams, which are impossible to fulfill. Yeah, actually. So here we are on day two of a beautiful Sesshin, and we have this opportunity to be really free, really free. Freedom is important, you know, freedom from illusion, freedom from fear and confusion. That's very sweet, yeah? And then it's possible to be connected to everything in a really open-hearted way. You know, normally we're trying to get something out of life. You know, normally we're trying to get something out of other people, and we're trying to get something out of the moment. You know, we're kind of like involved in a deal with life. It's like, if you give me what I want, I'll like you, you know, life. Yeah? And everybody does this, you know. Even, I mean, actually, you know, humans do this, you know, all the time. Even in our deepest relationships with other people, you know, there's like a hidden agenda. It's not cynicism, it's just how we are, you know. I mean, when you meet somebody and you fall in love, you're really saying, look, you know, you'll fulfill my dreams and I'll fulfill your dreams, you know. And then one day you realize that this person may not be able to fulfill your dreams, and sometimes people go ballistic. You know? They want to be as far away from that person as possible. Sometimes, though, we realize, you know, this person is not here to fulfill my dreams, and cannot. Nobody can fulfill my dreams. Nobody can do that. If I'm asking somebody to do that for me, it's a mistake. In my humble opinion, nobody can do that. No power in the universe can do that. So you know, at that point we can hate the person, or we can feel real compassion. And compassion means, oh, we're both in the same boat, aren't we? You know, we're all in the same boat because, you know, the boats, you know, or we're all standing on the dock and the boat's already left and none of us are going anywhere. You know? And then you can, you know, be a decent human being, because you see we're all in the same disappointed state, yeah? Disillusioned state. And this might sound a little down, but believe me, being disillusioned is quite a wonderful thing, because the world in itself is so beautiful and so wonderful. You know, we're not going to be able to get something out of it. If we just be with it, you know, with compassion, we realize, well, you're not what I expected, you know, but I'm not what I expected either, you know, nothing is. And yet it's so wonderful to be alive. See? So who knows what you expected Sesshin to be, but here we are. That's a really beautiful path. Mumon's comment, not falling under causation, how could this make a monk into a fox? Not ignoring causation, how could this make the old man emancipated? If you come to understand this, you will realize how old Yakujo would have enjoyed 500 rebirths as a fox. Mumon's verse, not falling, not ignoring, two faces of the same dice, dies. Two faces of the same dice, not ignoring, not falling, 1,000 errors, 1,000,000 mistakes.